Hello, 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 and welcome to Buzzed Binging. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Christy, her mom.
And we are moving on to season 2, episode 7 of Ted Lasso called Headspace.
Headspace. Like, where's your head, man? Get your head in the game.
What?
Hey, this could be a High School Musical song.
It doesn't need to be, though.
Thank God, right?
Okay. Anyway, we have the usual disclaimers. We will be cursing, and there will be spoilers for Ted Lasso season 2.
And also,
like season 1, but by the time you like do season 2, you should have watched season 1.
Yeah, you'd better. I mean, seriously. So yeah, we are also having beverages. What are you having?
I'm having sweet tea.
Caffeine all the way. I went the route. I have alcohol, and I'm having what's called a cider and fireball. It has
I wonder what's in it.
But it has additional stuff. So it's got fireball whiskey, it's got sparkling hard cider, it's got Irish whiskey, and it's got ginger ale.
That's a lot.
It's a lot, but it's tasty, and it's over ice, so there we go.
That's fun.
And so here we are. We are in season 2, episode 7, and it starts with Roy and Keeley doing the Groundhog Day song, I Got You, Babe.
Oh, I didn't even think about the fact that it was the Groundhog Day song.
Well, yeah.
I heard the song, and I was like, oh, yeah, it's I Got You, Babe. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. And then I didn't put that two and two together.
It has multiple meanings in the context of this episode. So, yeah, I think that there's just that sense of everydayness. And I think that that's a lot of what this season's about, too. It's like kind of you got to like get into a grind, get into a rhythm and figure out where you're going from here. And so it's kind of interesting that they start that way.
Yeah. And it's a lot about like the monotony that can come into having a routine like they do. And basically you just see Keeley's morning routine and Roy just kind of appears everywhere. And it seems like he's just kind of tagging along with like most of the stuff that she does. And they work in the same office now, in the same place now. So they drive to work together. And she's about to go and go to a cafe to get some tea or something. And then he's like, oh, can I come? And she's like, yeah. But you can tell that she just wants a little bit of like me time just for her. And so it's kind of like, there's that kind of tension there.
It does. And everybody needs their space, but yeah, it's really very interesting, that kind of repetitive too much togetherness theme, the I Got You, Babe thought brings into that. And so we move on to Nate.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking to the paper. I have this as a note. What am I talking about?
Oh no, he goes to his parents' house and he just to like quote unquote visit, but it's mostly just to get approval. And his father is reading the paper, and his father, before he gets there, like sees the like front page is about Nate being the wonder kid. And he's very proud of it. But then once Nate comes in, he dismisses it a little bit, because I think that he doesn't. I feel like their relationship is more like Nate's always seeking approval and it's usually denied, and just to, I think, make him work harder or something like that. I don't know what, but there's also a throwback to like the suggestion boxes from last season of like that little box. It was so cute. From his niece. So that's fun. But yeah.
Right. Well, his dad, and I get this mindset. I think it was something that I was kind of raised with as well. And he even says, like, because Nate keeps, you know, quoting things out of the paper or talking about, oh, well, look, they're saying I'm great. And he's really wanting that. And his dad says, humility is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less.
That's smart.
It is smart. And that is really kind of, he's trying to change Nate's mindset, because of course we live in this society that's all about likes and all about approval and all about external and that kind of stuff. And it's not, and he's trying to get across, just because people are approving of you, it's not a bad thing, but you don't need to talk about it, right? You just need to stop thinking about it and keep doing what you're doing. You're doing it well, keep doing what you're doing. And you know, that is something that Nate's really struggling with because he's never really had the external approval. So he doesn't know how to act, right? And I think that that's part of what we see in this season for sure. But they go, and he definitely wants more approval from his parents. And he's like disappointed.
Yeah.
When that's the reaction he gets. So then we go to Ted and the doc. And Ted is very, very uncomfortable. He doesn't know like where to sit in the room for his session. He lies down about
whether or not he actually needs the appointment, even though he said he needed the appointment. And right. Also there's like a Sopranos reference and stuff like that. And he really
lies down like he's on a water slide.
He's just trying to stall for time because he doesn't want to actually get to the meat of what the therapy session will actually be. And but the doctor is trying to comfort him and tells him not to worry. And then she tries to ask him about the other night and when she found him, and he was just like, nope, not doing this, and then just leaves.
Right. Like, I mean, he's just doing anything. Like, she has one of those bobbing bird toys, the ones that they put the beak in the water and it bounces back at, and he sits there and plays with that rather than talking about what's going on with him. Mm-hmm. And he's just, he can't do it. He can't.
I don't know where this, I think it's from the next scene where at practice, but for some reason, Ted just says, Durden Tootin, Vladimir Putin. And I'm like, okay. It seems so random to me.
Yeah, he has this kind of homespunness, you know, happy kind of just almost overly nice guy demeanor, and that's been, you know, well developed throughout the series. But you know, as he's going along, there are like even just these weird, almost dark references that kind of creep into his banter, and it's kind of interesting to watch. So he gets
then have like the team basically are kind of like joking around with Nate, and but Nate's just he kind of like jokes a little bit back, but then he's just like, okay, we're gonna run a drill. And Colin, who is the one who was like who made a jab at him or whatever, he tells Colin to sit out, even though he wasn't the only one who was doing that. And making jokes about Nate and with him. So yeah. And then Colin, they go off and do the drill, it's just Colin and Beard, and Colin does his mantra of I am a strong and capable man, and then Beard just next to him and says, cool.
Yeah, it's interesting. But there was one thing, like right at the beginning of practice, Ted goes in there, he's like, there's one thing you need to make sure that your opponent doesn't know, and somebody like yells out like, your home address. And he's like, that's true too. Also, to know that you're tired. Like, you can't let them see that you're tired. And that's part of the reason that they run these drills, is to get their endurance up. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that whole sequence with Nate is one of those like punishment for, you know, Colin making a joke at his expense. Just all of that is kind of crazy.
It gets worse.
Yeah. So Sam is they cut to Sam after practice, and he is not getting a response on his banter account.
But then he sees the three dots come up, and he's like, hey guys, three dots, and like everybody gathers around and are just so excited.
But there's all this banter the team about it. Like, Jamie is making fun of Sam, well, you probably shouldn't have listed your favorite film as Ratatouille. He's like, but Ratatouille's great.
Yeah, no, that comes up a little bit later when Rebecca sees it.
Yeah. And so, right. So, and it kind of cuts between Rebecca and Sam. And so Higgins is making fun of Rebecca, and Keeley is with them too. And Keeley's telling Rebecca that Ratatouille is a masterpiece.
But basically they're trying to convince her. She still hasn't responded to the text about that they should meet. And right. Rebecca is still agonizing over it and just like, right. I don't know if I should, whatever. And Keely's just like, just do it.
Right. And like, and so that is all part of the sequence, and you got the three dots, whatever. Rebecca notices though that Keely is miserable about mm-hmm. Roy. Like, anything about Roy is making her just clam up and shut down and all that stuff. And so they, Roy just like kind of walks into.
Oh, no. There's a great line that in this section where Keely says, he's like my shadow, my adorably hairy shadow. And then Roy comes in, and then Rebecca, just to like deflect because Keely doesn't see him come in, starts jazz scatting. And Roy
Higgins.
Comes in and is just like, why are you jazz scatting? Were you talking about me? And Keely's honest and was just like, yes. And Rebecca says, denies it. But then he's just like, all right, well big whoop. Okay.
Yeah, and then he growls. Roy growls and he walks out.
Yeah.
And like,
I think that it's, I'll go ahead and talk about this here, but even though this part works well here, like this kind of, the tension in their relationship, this kind of tension works mm-hmm. well here. I think it also could have worked a bit earlier in the season when he was in between retirement and being a coach or a pundit and all that stuff. I feel like that could have also worked a bit better as well, but then there wouldn't have been the element of,
at like, the same office. I can see both of those things. You know, this kind of, he's getting his identity back in a way, but the way it interacts with Keely, you know, she liked him being a member of the team, but doesn't really like this, like him having all this free time where he can bug her, right? Mm-hmm. because when he was a member of the team, he had to do all this training and he had to do all these additional things to keep himself in shape. That was more about like him, I guess, as a physical being. And now he's got time to, I guess, bug the shit out of her. They get back to their house. I guess the next note I have is that they are back at the house, flat, whatever they share. And Keely's got all this work to do. I mean, she's just like, ugh, I can't. And then, you know, she asks him, like, you know, can you go, whatever? And so, and he goes and he says,
Roy's like, trying to distract her with sex.
Well, right. And then he's like, all right, fine, I'm going to go over here and read. And then she like runs up to him and hops on him because, you're doing what I actually told you to do. That's so hot.
It's like, you can't do that. It's like, what? I'm doing exactly what you told me to. I know, it's so hot. And I'm just like, Keely, sweetie, like,
figure out what you want. Mixed messages.
Very mixed. And then we go over to Ted and the doctor again. And mm-hmm. Ted's very candid with her. And he basically says that he thinks therapy is bullshit and that she doesn't even know him. And she expects, and even though she doesn't know him and he doesn't really know her, she expects him to spill all of his dirty laundry and all of his secrets and all that stuff to her, even though she doesn't care about him. And she isn't really listening to him. She's just making money off of just pretending to listen and care about him. And there was this one quote that I actually think was really good was, you're going to diagnose my tears and probably blame it on my folks, right? I think right. that's very, it's an interesting take. And then he leaves.
Right. Well, but this is the other thing. She's, you know, she's clearly offended by that.
Yeah, that's her livelihood.
Right. And you know, Ted, in this discussion, he does talk about the fact that he's done couples therapy, and he keeps coming back because he doesn't quit things, right? But he just is really, he just does not see the value in it because he got nothing out of previous therapy. And I certainly can see that. It's one of those things that I've seen be useful for some people, but not for others. So, you know, it kind of is what it is. So then Sam and Rebecca bump into each other while they are checking their phones, checking mm-hmm. their Twitter accounts. It is really cute.
They're about to quote the same thing to each other. And it's just like, oh, okay. Interesting. We think alike. And then they just walk away. And then we get to the scene that I really want to talk about.
Okay. Well, I don't know if this is the scene you really want to talk about. Will the towel boy? Did you have?
Oh no, no, no! I have a note about that. It's just Nate ignores the new kit boy. Yeah. Poor Will.
Yeah,
he doesn't deserve this. And then Colin comes in, mm-hmm. and the worst part, and this was blocked very well. This scene was because Nate just has his back to him on his phone, looking at the comments, like the positive comments he's getting on Twitter or whatever. And yeah. Colin comes in and he's asked Nate if he's done anything to annoy him. Because Danny and Jamie made jokes about him, but he was the only one who was punished. And I'm very proud of Colin because he's taking initiative and asking what's wrong.
Right.
Because he's a strong and capable man. And then yeah. we go to, and then Nate says, oh, well, think about it this way. Jamie and Danny are like Picasso and, oh gosh.
Is it Dali?
No, it was like Gaudi.
Oh, Gaudi.
Another artist, and then Colin is like pedophiles, and then he's like artists, and Colin, you paint too, but your work doesn't end up in museums, and you just do the job rather than and like actually inspire people. And I made this note, and I think I was just very upset, but I'll just read it word for word. This scene makes me unreasonably angry. Poor Colin deserves respect, you asshole. What kind of clown fuckery is this? Nathan, you are the worst. I was very upset.
That is a completely accurate response. I felt exactly the same way. It's like someone needs to beat the shit out of you, Nate. And you know, you don't want to think that because you've seen like he's had like all this growth and had been given all these opportunities, and he just is such a dick about it. Like he's acting so I don't want to use the word entitled.
He is.
He's acting entitled, and it's like, dude.
Oh, and also, you know, Beard listens in on all of this.
Right. So Beard kind of comes in and is like,
well, that's a scene later on, but like that scene makes me so angry because Colin is doing everything right. He's approaching it. He's being completely candid. It's like, hey, I want to know what I'm doing wrong so I can fix it. And then Nate tells him, just you aren't good at your job, so just kind of go do it. You're not worth it or whatever. He's just putting him down. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Well, it's kind of a, you really need to understand, Nate, that is your job to make him better.
Mm-hmm.
And I do see Nate's perspective on this too. And of course,
but still, don't be a dick about it.
No, but right, you don't have to be a dick about it. You can just be like, well, you know, I'm sorry, I won't do it again, or just, you know, apologize. But he's so self-absorbed. It's like, I don't know. I mean, because again, I get Nate's perspective. Like there are some players on a team or, you know, people in a workplace or whatever, that are never going to get better. Like they're always going to be like middle of the pack. Fine. You don't have to be an asshole.
Don't tell them that, first of all. Second of all, if there's something you can do about it, like to help them become better in any way, which is your job as a coach, then do it.
Right, like, but it's also
sit down on drills is not going to make him any better.
Right, you're just right, exactly, exactly.
Even more in like mediocre than you think he is.
Right, you don't need to punish him. You don't need to do it. You don't even need to seriously engage with someone like that. Right, I mean, if you know, he comes and he asks and it's like, well, I apologize, I need to think about it or whatever. You don't have to be an asshole. And I think that's part of what bugs me about Nate is like, you can disengage from it, but you just seem to be pursuing like this punishment aspect, and that's just wrong.
Yeah, and you know what he does right after this? He goes back to his fucking positive comments on Twitter. Fuck you, Nate.
Yeah, like you need all of this reassurance. Why wouldn't Colin? You were not that long ago just Mr. Average.
I'm so dickhead.
I get it. Absolutely. So then you've got Keely and she is smoking in the boot room.
Mm-hmm.
And Teg is in there, Rebecca goes in there, Tellboy goes in there,
Higgins is in there,
Yeah, Higgins is in there.
Higgins is smoking a pipe.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even notice that. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
He's like so like Mr. Artsy dude. It's so funny.
They basically designated the boot room as the smoking room.
Right, which it really shouldn't be, but I guess they figure it smells so bad no one's gonna notice. They're in there and Keely's talking to Rebecca basically about how she needs space from Roy. She just
and needs... Roy's in her office right now reading the Da Vinci Code.
Yeah. And so Ted comes in, he's like, well, it's good to bottle things up.
That's how you get pickles. And then Keely's like, and vodka. And Kit Boy says extra virgin olive oil and yeah. And messages.
And so and then Jamie, the kid boy says something about Jamie.
Well, no, Jamie comes in and he wants Will to make his name bigger on his jersey. And they like, of course he does. And he comes in and they like are talking about Roy and he's just like, oh, he's just a prick or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then Keely's quick to defend him. And then Roy comes in and asks if they're talking about him. And they all say yes. And he doesn't care.
Right. Right.
And then we get to the scene. Oh my God.
All right. So Keely, it cuts to their house and Keely is watching Sex and the City, which is not a show I ever actually watched or enjoyed. I gather that people do, but whatever. Mm-hmm. And the scene that's on the TV is basically about like, oh, I need my own space. I need to move out of my apartment kind of thing.
What's going on in their actual relationship.
Right. And so Roy decides he's going to read on the couch, but he's talking over the show about the Da Vinci Code, which again, you know, I've got to put this out there. I read the Da Vinci Code. I thought it was garbage. So for me, I'm looking at this like, the pop culture references, you know, normally for me are in the show are things like, oh, wow, that's great. These are both like, this is shit. So, you know, whatever.
So it doesn't speak to you.
Right. But Keely's getting upset because she can't hear her show, which again, that is a pet peeve of mine. Like if I'm watching a show, shut the fuck up. You know, just let me do my thing. And so Roy finally figures out that Keely is like, talking about him like
she says she basically explodes on him and like even jumps up onto the couch like a toddler and explodes on him and tells him that she wishes that he wasn't always around there like around her like reading or turning her on or like all that stuff and he says you don't want me to turn you on and she's like no and it's like well yes sometimes but not all the time and she basically just tells him that she wants more space to like time to herself and that's when he asks if like she's been talking about him, if that's what she's been telling other people that he, and I quote, is a needy, clingy fucking fridge magnet.
Yeah.
And he gets really upset and he leaves and Keely knows that she shouldn't have gone about doing that in that way.
Right. And she should have talked to him, not talked to them. And here's one of those situations. I think we've all kind of been there. Like you don't know how to approach a situation in a relationship. And so you ask your friends for advice, like how should I phrase this? How do I handle this? Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. You know, they may have more experience. They may have different experience and you might get ideas from them on how to deal with this situation.
But putting an offer that long, even though he's completely aware that she's talking about him to Rebecca and to all these other people, I think that it's really irresponsible of her to just not be like, even though he already knows it, it's like you should just tell him now, like just you yeah. He already knows that you're talking about him, don't you think he has a right to know? And also this will make your relationship stronger if he knows what he's doing is annoying you and right. He's willing to work on stuff, so just tell him.
Right. And it's weird to me, you know, there's like personal stuff in a relationship that you just don't really talk about with other people. You just, I don't know. I've always kind of made it a policy, like if I have an issue, particularly in a romantic relationship, I need to talk to the person that I'm in that relationship with. Now, of course, that makes it easy when you're like married and you've been married a long time like I have. But
you know, when you're dating, especially early on dating, I think it's a lot harder because you don't want to test the romantic relationship too much because that's, you don't know how stable that is, right? So you go to the stable relationships and get advice there, and then bring that to the relationship that may be less stable, I guess.
I think it's also an element of trust and stuff like that. Like,
yeah.
Based, and from Roy's perspective, she didn't trust him enough to make changes in their relationship to make things better. And just the way that she's phrasing it to him in that moment is like, you just want me to leave you alone? Are you like just trying to like get me out of your life or something? Like, do you want me to work with you? Do you want me to be in a relationship with you? What do you want me to do? Do you want me to move out? Like, it's confusing for him, and he has every right to be upset.
Yes. Because
I mean, honestly, like just hearing people have been talking about you behind your back and like making it seem like you're very clingy, like you're very needy. This has happened to me, by the way, but like, it's like not exactly in so many words, but it's just like, it makes you feel very inadequate. And it also makes you feel like, okay, well, you didn't feel like you could talk to me about this. And that's not necessarily, it kind of doesn't like equally place blame in the correct place. Because right. There are many reasons why, like, yes, he has been a bit like needy, a little bit clingy, whatever. That's proximity. And that's also just like, oh, well, we should do relationship stuff. But also it's like, she's blaming him for all of it, even though she could have gone to him and helped him fix this. Like, if it was bothering him, come and fix it. Like, they're both adults, easily fix it. It's like,
right. I mean, just, you know, talk about, hey, I kind of need some balance. I need to do some time with the girls or whatever the hell you need to do. And if you don't do that, if you don't talk about what the actual problem is, it comes out like this. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he was thinking, you know, go fuck yourself kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's almost like she's expecting him to make all these changes.
Right.
She doesn't have to do anything. Like, she didn't the effort of telling him that she wants these changes. She just was kind of hoping they would just organically happen. So it's kind of like, you need to talk to this person about it. Like,
right.
Come on.
Right. That's what a relationship is. It isn't like, oh, this person does everything for you.
Yeah. It's a give and take, and you're really not doing much, Keely. Like, and yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, she was very great and very giving and whatever early on in the relationship. And maybe she feels like she's done, you know, and that's not really how that works.
No.
So yeah, I mean, it's disappointing. And of course, you know, Keely as a character is a really fun character, but at the same time, you're kind of like,
like, we both love these characters individually, and I love them also as a couple, but it's like, it's kind of annoying to see that they are feeling this insecure about their relationship.
Because, this early.
This early on. And I'm like, y'all have been doing great. Like, if this happened, it's like, it's one thing if this happened, not necessarily this exact situation, but like, well, actually, I'll save that for another episode. There's something.
Right. But, you know, some part of my thought is that Keely's never been in what I would consider to be a healthy relationship. Mm-hmm. She's been in like these relationships with their Jamie Tart types who are like screwing around on her. So yeah, they're not around all the time because they're all screwing around on you. Yeah. So maybe she doesn't know what a healthy relationship is.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, we had that sense like Roy doesn't, you know, because that was like the entirety of season one was, oh, Roy doesn't know what a healthy relationship is. But the truth is Keely doesn't either. And you know, that's reality for a lot of people. They do have to work that out. And, you know, we are going to see that, you know, I guess, as it progresses. Anyway, so we get back to the Nate storyline, which is like, ugh.
I wrote down, like, before I even wrote anything about the scene, like, I think Nate's listening to a podcast about him and
how great he is. He should be managing his own team.
Yeah. And I wrote down, I'm getting sick of Nate. Like, I get it. We've all been there, but Jesus. And then Beard is in Nate's office and scares him, and this is really funny to me. Beard's married to Colin, and Beard hasn't told Ted about it, but he tells him that he needs to do better, or else he will tell Ted. He's gonna tell Ted anyway, but still. But then when Nate is told to leave his office, he realizes that it is his office and turns back, and Beard's just gone.
He's just disappeared. Right? It's hilarious.
And then. To the parking lot where Keely is waiting for Roy in the parking lot, and she tries to talk, like she's trying to talk to Roy, but he's avoiding her. And I think that he's doing it not just to be petty, but also thinks he's giving her what she wants.
Yes.
To a certain extent. So it's kind of like, you asked for it, sweetie. You wanted space. I don't know what to tell you. You weren't clear in your language. I know you're trying to talk to him, but maybe you need to do this another time. I don't know. Not at work.
Yeah. Yeah. So then we've got Ted at the doctor again, and he's playing with the bird again. Yeah. And he finally, he like stops the bird, and you know, the doctor is, you know, she dresses him down. Bless her. She does a great job with this. She's like, look, I was offended by your dress down of me. You know, you've got this fight or flight thing, and I think you're scared. But you know, I give myself, you know, yeah, I'm paid to do my job. You're paid to do your job. Does it mean you don't do your job well? I mean, that's part of what my job is. But you know, she also says, look, the truth is going to set you free, but it's also going to piss you off.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't be your mentor without being your tormentor.
Occasionally.
Right. So it's kind of fascinating. And Ted just, I think, is kind of taken aback by it.
But also, I'd like to point out the doctor puts tissues next to Ted and then he just throws them across the room and then they just laugh about it. I thought it was funny.
Yeah. So then Ted goes to the pitch to practice and he's like, you know, come on, everybody. We're living in the moment. Living in the moment is a gift. That's why they call it the present. So let's just go and do this.
I think Ted says, oh, I think Nate has something to say or something like that. Or maybe,
I think Beard says it. And then Nate.
Ted says something like, have at it, Jessica Rabbit. I'm like, okay. Nate apologizes to Colin and he's like, he says, yesterday I was a bit of a, and some of the players are like, asshole, prick, cock, and then Danny says, wounded butterfly. I love Danny so much. And then Colin forgives him and the team has a group hug and it's nice. And then I have this long quote from Ted, like he's asking Beard, what did I miss something? It's like, yeah, you missed something. It's like, do I need to know? It's like, nah, I don't know. Maybe we'll tell you later or something if it's relevant again. And then he says, like I always say, sometimes the best stew is the one you leave sitting on the stove overnight because you fell asleep watching Citizen Kane after too many beers. Okay.
That could totally happen. You know, falling asleep watching Citizen Kane after too many beers. Totally see it. They
split off into the
practice groups,
the starters, right. And the other one, Regency, right. And not Regency, something else.
Right. And Roy's got the starters, and he's like, you know, telling them to stop, and you know they have this big discussion about why Roy doesn't use a whistle.
And he says,
my lips are sensitive to impure metals, and whistles give me mouth hives.
Well, also, instead of like using the whistle, he just yells whistle, which I love.
Yeah.
Goes off on Jamie about teammates needing to support each other and to be there for each other. And then Jamie has this whole thing about, oh, but I need to give him the space to like make the goal or something like that or whatever. And he thinks about it for a second and yells fuck and then walks off.
Roy does. Yeah, Roy does, because of course it's like this lightning bolt moment for him. He's like, ah, they need space to do what's right. And it, one of the things, like, again, I'll note, like, the background music is this like Buddhist sitar music, like, you know, this kind of Hindu realization kind of thing. So yeah, he yells fuck. They go into the locker room and the team is giving Nate a jersey that says Wonder Kid on it, and he's pissed because it should say Wunderkind, but he had
Wunderkid.
right so
also they're giving it to, because he apologized, he, and it was apparently Will the Kit Boy's idea. And yeah. Then you go to the to the pub, and you and Trent Crim, the Independent, comes up to Ted about and asks for a quote about him, why he ran off the field during the match, and but Ted just says it's food poisoning again. And then you go to over to Keely and Roy's place, and Keely sees some bags being packed, and
she's terrified. Yeah, she's
worried, and she runs up to talk to Roy, and she finds him, and like he tells her that he's not leaving, and he just shows her that he made her a very fancy and romantic bath with like candles and rose petals, and
he has this list on Spotify. It actually exists. There's an actual playlist on Spotify. Sure, like,
that's great.
Roy is sorry.
Roy is sorry for not understanding Keely playlist. And
yeah, it actually exists.
He reveals he stole the roses from her neighbor's garden and like shredded them. And then he used Phoebe's nightlight that he has to return or else. And I love that they both refer to each other as the cat's pajamas. Keely early on when she was talking to Rebecca about their relationship, she's like, well, I think he's the cat's pajamas or whatever, and it's just like, okay, that's cute. And then you go here like to here, and he's talking about, oh yeah, I have this foot scrubber thing. It's like, you don't think I have nice feet? It's just like, I think you're the cat's pajamas, but you have really awful fucking feet.
Right, but it's all this great setup, and you know, he just basically lets her do her thing, and she says thank you, and we cut also to Nate, and Nate's scrolling through his tweets, and there's still some negative tweets about
I'm sorry, babe, is one negative tweet.
right, but then he takes it out on the kit boy.
Yeah, he goes to, he hears Will whistling in the background, and he goes into the room, and he says, and I quote, if you do anything to humiliate me again, I'll make your life a fucking misery. And that's how the episode ends. That asshole.
Yeah, Nate, I'm so fucking over Nate and his little power hungry bullshit. I just don't have like any good things to say about that. Anyway. So I think it's probably pretty obvious my worst part in this whole episode is Nate.
Well, let's start with the best part, though.
Okay. Best part to me is Roy realizing what's happening with Keely and fixing it. Mm-hmm. I think, because again, you know, I think that shows the maturity of Roy.
Yeah.
Because I can see myself in his shoes with, you know, her talking behind my back, blah, 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 whatever. It's like, you know, fuck it, I'm out of here. And I think a lot of people do that. But the fact that he, you know, has that lightning bolt moment, he doesn't even really discuss it with her. He's just like, I need to change what I'm doing. And he does it on a dime, and he gets it and fixes it. I just, again, it makes me like love Roy Kent.
You see the bags being, that the bags have been packed, but I'm like, what?
Those were bags of him bringing stuff in.
Oh, I think, yeah, that's probably it.
Yeah.
I was about to say, it's like, wait, why were the bags packed in the first place? Maybe to bait her into like going up to their bedroom and being like, yeah,
that's an idea too. But yeah, I was thinking it's like him getting like the light and the rose petals and just, you know, all the stuff, getting all that together, and like, I don't know, with the speakers and things to play the playlist, and he made her a mixtape. Isn't that sweet? No, I love that. That's my best part. What's your best part?
Well, Roy and Keely making up, but also Ted and the doctor. I liked how he was able to, I liked the back and forth there at the beginning, and maybe like the first two ones, I was kind of like, okay, we're just going back and forth about like how he's in denial and that kind of stuff. But I really liked how the doctor responded to it. And even like some of the points that Ted made were interesting, but also I just liked how the doctor handled it and how she talked him through it. And it's just like, okay, there's going to have to be an element of trust here. I do care about all of these people. And I like that she made an analogy about like comparing it to coaching and all that stuff to make it make sense to him. But yeah, worst part
is Nate. I am so, so disappointed in him. And I'm also, and it's interesting that you used Ted and the doctor as one of your best parts. I'm disappointed in Ted. You know, he talks such a big game about being a better person and blah, blah, blah. And he's not even he's making the effort to show up, but he is not making the effort to engage. Mm. And I get it. You know, obviously I think we've all dealt with very deep seated emotional issues, and and trying to work through them. And I think that everybody has their things to process. But the fact that he is not terribly introspective about that for himself is disappointing to me. I know that, you know, this season explores that, but in this episode, I was disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
So that was mine. What was yours?
In all caps, Nathan, that asshole. And then Roy and Keely fighting. I didn't like it. I've dealt with it before in oddly a very similar case. I have dealt with it. And, but it just seeing it like in a TV show made me even more angry. But it's just annoying because I thought of them as like, obviously all couples have their ups and downs. I mean, that's a given. And obviously like this big shift in like the status of their relationship as like now they are also working together, and that's bound to affect some stuff. But I mean, it's just, I'm glad they made up in the end, because if this was a long running plot line or a through line throughout the rest of the season, I would be very pissed. But I'm glad they were able to resolve it. And I kind of wish that one thing I would change a little bit is Keely trying to make it up to Roy a little bit more, instead of it just being Roy making her the bath. I love that Roy does that, because it acknowledges the fact that he knows that he reacted very strongly, and he apologizes for that. He also apologizes for not acknowledging that maybe she does need some space and what that could mean and all that stuff. It acknowledges that he understands what's going on. But I don't see the same level of acknowledgement from Keely of like what she did wrong in this scenario, even though you see her like struggle a little bit, like once she says it and then she regrets it and then he ignores her or whatever. That I don't feel like she did enough to like make things like on equal footing as far as who made up to who.
He's doing all the work. He is doing all the work.
And I'm worried that that's, I don't really love that, because I think that it's not fair to him to, right. Because like, did he react strongly? Yes. Was he the one who was going to have to make some changes as well as Keely? Yes. But you see him making the changes, but not her. And that's not great. I don't think that's very healthy, and that's not a really great way of doing it. And yes, he's taking the high road, but you don't see her trying to like, she didn't even, I don't think she even like really apologized to him.
No.
I think she feels,
I mean, of course she does. Says it. I think she said, oh, I'm sorry, you know, whatever. But you know, the way, because, and I think this is actually kind of a flaw in gender dynamics, I guess. You hear women say, we're sorry a lot. I say it a lot. You know, I'm sorry, but, you know, those kinds of apologizing. Right, exactly. And because you're always apologizing, when you are sincerely, I'm going to make massive changes in my life, kind of apologizing, you don't always hear it. And I didn't hear it from her. And I think that that's what you're saying. I didn't hear it from her either.
I think what was missing was that I think she needed to explain her mindset to Roy a little bit better, because I think that, yes, they had the big blow up and then they spend a little bit of time like that day, like apart with him ignoring her and all that stuff. And I think that would have been a good time for her to self-reflect about like, okay, I need to word it correctly. I want to explain very succinctly what I mean, like what I actually mean by space. I don't want to break up. I don't want to do this or that or the other. I just really want a little bit of me time so that I can have a nice balance in my life. But
right.
I don't see her or hear her saying any of that stuff or apologizing to Roy about like acting a little bit really childish and like jumping onto the couch and just yelling about like how she doesn't like him distracting her and not phrasing it well. I think that it would have been great if in that scene he does the bath thing and she stops him from leaving and like explains her mindset to him and she apologizes and all that stuff. That would have been a better, more complete ending for that scene and that
conflict. Right. Yeah. And while you were talking, I was kind of thinking, you know, it's an interesting juxtaposition, really. So like we've been, first of all, trained to think that guys are inarticulate and, you know, they can't talk about their emotions and blah, 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 whatever. But this is a situation where she's inarticulate. And I think that that is how the power dynamic in their relationship has changed. Like, we're exploring, like, oh, you know, men can be like difficult in relationships.
He knows his emotions better and his vulnerability a bit better with her, but she hasn't really been opening up to him all that much, even though she's pretty much open book. But when it comes down to these conflicts, she's not really vocalizing her feelings.
All right, but again, that I think is a very real issue in a lot of relationships. Yeah. Like, you know, there's going to be some lack of articulation and this kind of idea that, oh, he should just know. You know, women do that. I mean, that's definitely true.
Oh, I almost forgot. For best part, I want to also say Beard.
Oh yeah,
because he just kicks.
He doesn't do much
with Nate. I'm just like, I hate Nate so much.
Yeah, I actually wanted him to kick the shit out of Nate, but you know.
I wish he actually did kick the shit. Yeah, I really wish.
Yeah,
I did this episode.
I gave this episode a B+. I think it moves the plot forward in several respects about, like, you know, where the team is going to be going, you know, whether they're going to get their act together, those kinds of things, or not. But I didn't, you know, I don't love it. I like the fact that they're exploring these conflicts. What did you give it?
A B-. I think that Nate is just so much, and I really, really, the fact that there are two moments that make me just so, so mad at Nate is like, you couldn't have spread them out. Like, I do really like, again, like, and as I explained, I think that I've really cemented the B- in my head just based off of like the Roy and Keely thing. As much as I like them making up, I don't think it's very equal. And as for Ted and the doctor, I do have some mixed feelings about it, but they're more positive than negative. So it's not like a C, but I think a B- is good.
Okay. All right. Well, that really works for me. And obviously we're going to be proceeding with more of season two of Ted Lasso. And we're going to see where these relationships are going and whether we suddenly start liking some of these characters better or these conflicts resolve. So we are looking forward to all of you joining us. Yes, aren't we? Yes.
Yeah.
And we will see you in our next episode. And
cheers.
Cheers.